Welcome to this episode of Living Legends, brought to you by the New Farm Insider. I'm your host today, John Reitman, and our guest is David Stone, recently retired from the Honors Course in Ooltewah, Tennessee. David, thanks for joining us today, and I hope I haven't butchered the name of your hometown there too much.
Oh, you did good. Most people have a lot of trouble with that name. It means resting place of the owls, is what it means.
Oh, is that right?
Ooltewah, that's right.
No, you're recently retired there from the Honors Course. I think everybody's probably heard of the Honors Course. But for those of our listeners who haven't been there, can you tell us a little bit about the property? I know you've spent about 75% of your career there. What made this such a special place?
It was basically about 500 acres. And the person who funded it, Jack Lupton, his granddad had gotten wealthy, some of the first bottlers of Coca-Cola, and then Jack continued that. But they had 500 acres, and there was no housing development or anything around it, and he gave it Pete Dye and said, build me a great golf course. And I came down here. I was superintendent of Holston Hills Country Club in Knoxville at the time, which was, I think, still maybe a top five golf course in the state of Tennessee. But I came down, and I saw the magnitude of it, and it just blew me away.
Throughout your career, you've spoken a lot at state, regional, and national conferences. What are some of the topics that you like to address to share with your colleagues?
Well, I've probably done more talks on zoysia grass than anything. I did teach a zoysia seminar with Milt Engelke for several years, and then the last few years where we gave it, it was with Dr. Aaron Patton, who's at Purdue now. But also, I've done a lot of talking about bentgrass greens over the years, too, because I was able to be quite successful with bentgrass at three different golf courses in the southeast, and particularly poor air movement and that sort of thing, and where I did a lot of work with evaluating new varieties of bentgrass. So I did a lot of talks on that.
There's been quite a shift throughout the southeast away from bentgrass towards some of the ultra dwarf Bermuda grass greens. Was that a route you've ever gone in your career?
Yeah, we sure did. We converted the greens at the Honors Course to Champion Bermuda in 2013. And I had actually tried to convince them a few years earlier, three or four years earlier, to do that, because back in the old days, if you had bentgrass greens at 10 feet in the summertime, people were doing cartwheels. They were tickled to death with them. And we were able to do that and give them really good greens pretty much year-round. But when that wasn't fast enough, and you'd have tournaments, particularly in the late spring, where they wanted the greens 12 feet, well, that puts so much thinning and stress on bentgrass that there's not much margin there for any kind of rainy, bad weather in the summertime. So the last few years, we tend to get a little bit of thinning. And not bad, but they thought it was bad because it was worse than what they'd ever seen. And at the same time, I was going to places around the area that had switched to ultra dwarf greens, and I'm saying, their greens are better than I can make these bentgrass greens no matter what I do. And so I tried to sell it, and it took about 3 years to convince them, but I put in a couple of little test greens and let them start putting on them. We made the switch in 2013. And now, I mean, it's nothing to have the greens here 13 or 13 and a half all the time.
You've gained some recognition for experimenting with various chemistries. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came about being such an amateur
experimenter?
Yeah, amateur chemist on the golf course.
Well, my professor at the University of Tennessee, Dr. Lloyd Callahan, he did a lot of experimentation back when they didn't have a lot of money to do things. And he had some very interesting observations, such as when he put in certain fungicide tests on his plots, occasionally, a few months after the fungicide test was over, he'd have more disease where he'd had certain fungicides than where he didn't treat at all. And he said there's an interaction going on that we really don't understand in a lot of things. And so that always had my interest in continuing to do a lot of testing so that you could observe things like that. the one that I probably most known for is figuring out how to control Bermuda grass and zoysia grass. And that came about after we switched to Bermuda grass, to zoysia grass fairways from Bermuda in 1985. And by 1988, a lot of Bermuda had already started to come back in the zoysia, to the extent some fairways were like 30% Bermuda. And I knew I was going to lose the zoysia back to Bermuda if I didn't figure something out. And I knew that there wasn't enough interest by chemical companies. There wasn't a big enough market for them to develop anything. And so I got a book, an ag book, of lists of chemicals, and I looked in the labels, and anything that was listed to control Bermuda grass, I bought some of it. And I had 1 gallon pots of zoysia grass in Bermuda, and I screened 40 different chemicals in those little pots. And it was really coming down to a few drops in an eyedropper in some water and squirting it on with a Windex bottle. But I actually figured out that fusillade would do a lot of damage to the Bermuda and do a little damage to the zoysia, but was very tolerable. It was the only one that would. And so so we put out larger tests, of course, and then we started spraying fairways with it. And then and it worked, and I was able to reclaim those fairways. And then about 10 years later, Trey Cutshaw was an assistant for me here, and he's superintendent at the Farm Golf Club in Dalton, Georgia now. But I had read something about terpylon ester being used in Arizona near bentgrass greens on overseeded rye to keep the Bermuda out. And so I thought, well, I'd like to try that on zoysia grass too. So I got some, and I had him spray a few strips on this certain fairway. And I said, you know, let's see what happens just for kicks if we put some fusillade in with that terpylon ester. So we did, and we sprayed a few more strips. And about a week later, he came into the office and said, you got to come out and look and see those strips that we sprayed in 7 fairway. And where we had sprayed the mixture, we had a better kill on the Bermuda than fusillade by itself or than terpylon ester by itself, and we had even less damage to the zoysia. In fact, it made the zoysia greener than the untreated. So so that was the real thing that I hit on there that I guess I'd say I'm most proud of.
How did that change what you were doing, and how did it affect maybe what some of your colleagues were doing as well?
Well, that's become a standard for people with zoysia grass fairways, that many times they do fight Bermuda grass coming back in, either Bermuda that was already there or Bermuda that was in the sod that they bought. And without it here, we wouldn't have been able to keep zoysia fairways. It would have eventually taken over. And the fact that the Bermuda, it won't control it 100% unless you keep after it steadily year after year. But as it starts to come back a little bit, you can go back and treat. I used to treat 3 times a year. And the last few years here, maybe we'd only treat once a year just to knock back a little bit coming back. So it had to be a maintenance program, but at the same time, you could control it.
Going back to when you were younger, you were an accomplished junior golfer. How did you get started in the game?
Oh, I went to somebody's birthday party, and they had a crude little few holes out in their lawn, and we played putt-putt golf, and I thought that was real interesting. And so then I got interested in golf, and I lived on a farm, and I thought, well, I'd love to have me a place to practice, so I started trying to learn how to make a green and put the grass in for a green. I'd ask questions of the golf course maintenance workers that I'd see at the golf course where I played, and got interested in it that way. Now, I won't say I was quite an accomplished golfer. Our high school golf team was pretty bad. It was bad enough that I was able to play on it 3 years. But I certainly enjoyed golf. And when I got to my senior year in high school, you know, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do. And there was a magazine article, and I believe it was either Golf Digest or Golf Digest or Golf Magazine, and it said that people are starting to go to college to be golf course superintendents. And I knew right then, I said, that's something I'd like to do.
Where did you grow up? Where was this family farm?
It was in Middle Tennessee. It was about 70 miles south of Nashville, and 20 miles south of Lewisburg, Tennessee, where I was born and where I went to high school. And I'd go to one of the golf courses I went to. They had 328 Bermuda grass greens, and the grass had spread down off the green and on the edge of the bunkers and down into the bunkers a little bit. And I would pull some of that grass out of the bunkers and take it back home and plant it in pots and let it spread. And then I'd plant that those spots in out into my green.
The practice green that you had built at home, what was the mowing height then? How were you even cutting it?
I didn't have a special mower. I just had a lawnmower, and I just set it down as absolutely short as you could set it. And it was a par three hole we had, and some of the neighborhood kids, they'd come and play with me there. We'd have fun time playing it.
And tell us a little bit about how you learned managing a golf course from that hole you had built on the farm.
Oh, I don't know that I learned anything from that hole on the farm or not, but early in my career, at first golf course I worked on had Bermuda grass greens. That was at Henry Horton State Park Golf Course, and one of the guys workers there told me something. We were a little short of help, and they'd skip some days mowing greens. And the guy told me, said, "You can't have good greens skipping mowings. You got to mow them every day." And I'll say I still believe that to this day, that is a true statement. That to have the best texture, you mow them daily. So I learned something from that. And then the first bent grass course I worked on, I eventually became superintendent of that course about 2 years later. They put me in charge of looking after the greens and taking care of the dry spots and that sort of thing. So that's the way I learned that. And then, of course, you learn all the time on the job after you're the head guy, too.
All right, David, hold tight. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after a brief message from our sponsor.
Pinpoint Fungicide from New Farm Americas contains a new active ingredient to deliver outstanding early and late season control of dollar spot. Pinpoint provides superintendents and turf management professionals with an excellent fungicide rotation partner to optimize disease management stewardship. Pinpoint's unique and targeted active ingredient has been proven in university performance trials and delivers outstanding control of dollar spot, take all patch, fairy ring, and brown patch to ensure a clean field of play. For more information, visit newfarm.com.
We're back on Living Legends, brought to you by the New Farm Insider. I'm your host, John Reitman, and our guest today is David Stone, who's recently retired after a long and successful career, including more than three decades at the Honors Course near Chattanooga, Tennessee. Throughout your career, how many former assistants and interns have gone on to become golf course superintendents?
I think the number's around 20, maybe 21. I kind of forgot the exact number. Certainly not all of those were assistants. I think about half of them were assistants, and the others were, like you say, were interns or worked for the summer or worked some part of their career. And most of those people are still in the business. I think there's only two or three that are no longer in the business.
You've mentored dozens of aspiring turfgrass managers. Who were some of the mentors that influenced your career?
George Bergen is one name I remember. He used to be at Atlanta Country Club. He was one of the guys, if you had an issue or was a little stumped about something, that you would call. Al Frenette at Peachtree. We were on the board together, the Southern Turfgrass Association, and Al was a very strong personality, but he did a lot of things really well and learned from Al. Monty Moncrief at the USGA was the first USGA agronomist that called upon me at the various courses. Those are some that really come to mind right off hand.
How's the business changed since the early days of your career?
Well, fairways were mowed with 30-inch gang reels, and they were sharpened once a year. And now they don't get as dull as the thinner blades do this day and time, but still nowhere near the precision that you have now. Fairways were mowed at 3/4 inch, and usually 3 times a week. And greens were mowed, when I first got in the business, were mowed at 1/4 inch, 250. And when I first got in the business, I liked fast greens, and I lowered them down a little bit to 3/16, and that's like 188, I believe. This old superintendent told me, he said, "No, that's as low as you can ever cut them, and you can't cut them that short all the time." Of course, you know, now people mow them at 100 or less. So the greens height is less than half what it used to be. Fairway heights are about half of what they used to be. So that's the biggest change. And just trying to still maintain good turf when you put that much more stress on them. That's been the biggest change and the biggest challenge.
How did you keep current with management practices and standards throughout the course of your career?
Well, I like to play golf, and I play in the GCSA Superintendent's Tournament every year. And we'd usually play at some pretty nice courses, so you would see things that they're doing at other places and learn from that. And visiting around with other superintendents, occasionally I'd just go off on a trip just to visit other golf courses. I was on a GCSA committee one time in Lawrence, and so I decided to go in early, and I drove down to Southern Hills and saw it when Bob Rehnquist was there, and I also went to Prairie Dunes, and Stan George, who's unfortunately passed away suddenly about 3 years ago. But I would use those opportunities to visit some great golf courses, and that's really the way you learn, is getting out and seeing what other people are doing.
If you were an 18-year-old coming out of high school and going into college, would you still study to become a superintendent, and why or why not?
Well, that's hard to say, but there may be less opportunities than there were when I was coming along, because I'm afraid there's still going to be a lot of golf courses that are eventually going to go out of business before it's all said and done. Now, there's a saying, there's always room at the top. So if you're good, really good, yes, it's still a great career. And they'll always be golf, I feel like, and you just have to have that right personality. People, it's kind of like being a football coach. Everybody's going to second guess what you do and that sort of thing. And you can't wear that on your sleeve too much. You can't let that show. And you got to know what you're doing. You got to be really good at communicating with people. Still getting around members and getting to know them and telling them what you're doing and why is very important. So if you're willing to do those things, and I think you need to like the game of golf too. I mean, I'm not sure why people get in it if they don't enjoy playing golf some. And I think it really helps to be a player to see the things, experience the things that the golfers are experiencing while you're maintaining the golf course. So if you're into that kind of thing and go into it with an open mind like that, yeah, you're always going to have people questioning what you're doing, then it's certainly still a good career.
You mentioned Southern Hills and Prairie Dunes. Obviously, you've had an opportunity to play at a lot of different places. Give us a handful of golf courses you've played that really made an impact on you and why you liked them so much.
Boy, that's a tough one. Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth is really good because I think it's such a playable golf course for people of all abilities. And that to me, helps determine what a great golf course is. A great golf course is one that's very challenging for the expert player, but doesn't have so many force carries and that sort of thing that an average golfer can't enjoy it. That one comes to mind. San Francisco Golf Club is one that I played that's truly special. Pebble Beach is special, of course. Butler National is a very difficult golf course, but very enjoyable. Sand Hills is probably the best of the new courses I've played in a long, long time. It's really enjoyable. I've been to Augusta National several times. I've never played it. The closest I've come is I have putted on some of the greens there. But, you know, Augusta gets a lot of blame for making golf too expensive. But Augusta's done tremendous good things for the game of golf and are continuing to do it, like that kids program there now where they go and have the dry pitch and putt contest. Great things they have done. But those are some that really stand out.
Whether it be colleagues in the industry, former employees, or members on the courses where you worked, how would you like the sum of your career to be remembered by those folks?
Well, I think I'd just like them to remember that I always tried to make the golf course better. I never got tired of my work. And just always thinking of some way that I thought we could make it a little bit better. Also, the fact that I was very big into seeing if we could make as much habitat to support different diversity of birds and butterflies and things of that nature, too, because they're losing habitat, and the golf course is one place where we could do a lot more than what we're doing to ensure that habitat still exists for those.
If you're a University of Tennessee graduate, I would be remiss if I were to let you go without asking you to comment on the state of volunteer football.
The state of volunteer football is not very good right now. Ever since they forced Philip Fulmer out about 10 years ago, they have really struggled, and it looked like maybe last year we were starting to turn the corner and getting better. Butch Jones, the current coach there now, inherited a pretty bad situation when he came, and he has made it better, but this year they're struggling, and unfortunately fans are not as tolerant as they used to be, and so I don't know how that will turn out, yeah, they remember the glory days, and anything less than that gets them ready to look for a new coach, unfortunately.
Do you get to the games very often?
Well, I for years and years I went to season tickets and went to all the games. The last 2 years I've backed off. I've never walked great, but I don't walk as well now as I used to as I'm getting older, and so getting to the games and getting through the traffic and everything has gotten tougher, so I don't go as much as I used to.
A couple of years ago at the Tennessee Turf Conference, Phil Fulmer was the keynote speaker there, and I recall he came up to you in a crowd of people. He walked up to you, shook your hand, and addressed you by your name. How long have you known Coach Fulmer, and when did you first meet?
I got to know him in the mid-1980s when he was an assistant coach at Tennessee. I got to know some of the guys up there, and so I invited some of the assistants to come down once a year on a Monday in June. They usually had a little time off then, and they'd come to the honors course, and we'd play golf, and then we'd go out to eat afterwards. And we did this for many years, and even after Philip was a head coach. And so, yeah, I've known him 30 years, and a lot of his assistants, too, like David Cutcliffe. In fact, David Cutcliffe, who's head coach at Duke, he's still every now and then out of clear blue. He'll give me a call up, see how things are going. So I've been a football fan for a long time and a big supporter of him, and it was fun getting to know those guys personally. Sometimes they'd tell you a little inside info that everybody else thinks they know but don't know. So that was kind of neat.
Well, David, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate your time and enjoyed getting a chance to visit with you.
Well, you're welcome, John. Glad to do it. I'm going to go eat some lunch here in a little bit, and then I'm going to play Wednesday round of golf here at the club with some members.
Hit them straight.
I'll do that. I just don't hit it very far.